It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Anatula.
Yeah, In the Loop on a Tuesday. Appreciate you hanging out with us. And thanks to 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans, for providing the 5-Hour Energy fan line where you can get involved. 713-572-4610. Where a lot of folks hanging out with us, talking back to the show. We appreciate that.
They're talking back to me?
All right, the dad jumped out. He's like, what you mean talking back?
They're talking back to me?
Who talking back? What are you going to do? Whoop somebody? Put somebody in timeout? What's up?
It's very much appreciated in this case.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's very appreciated. Talk back to the show. Talk back to Lopez in particular.
Yeah. Talk back to the hand.
Yeah. He said talk to the hand. What is this? 713-572-4610. All right. So with this Texas team, everybody's been trying to figure out what is it? What is the thing? What is the last piece that is kind of keeping them from being their best selves? And Lopez, I feel like you did a little bit of a case study here.
Little bit. Is it the Texans offensive line that's the problem, or is it Bobby Slowick? Simple question. Simple question. You know, there is a problem. You know, B. Scott was talking about, you know, first half, second half. Oh, they look pretty dang good. Oh, now they don't. C.J. Stroud, that's the C.J. Stroud we know. Oh, that's not the C.J. Stroud we know.
There's not the one that we like to know.
There is an issue with this offense, whether it's protecting C.J. Stroud and rattling him a little bit, as we've been talking about, or first half versus second half. And it's really a wild number to think about, that they have not scored an offensive touchdown in 4 games.
15 points in those second halves combined.
Yeah.
15 points in the last 4 second halves.
Yeah. So which one is it? Let me ask you, because there is a case to be made on each. Let me state the case. It's the offensive line. The offensive line is the problem.
All right.
They need to make wholesale changes at the end of the year. It's the offensive line.
Case for the offensive line as issue. The floor is yours, counselor.
All right. Well, here's the first point. If you're now, keep in mind, we're going to get to Bobby Slowick here in a second.
Uh-huh.
But here's the case that it is the offensive line and things need to change. No quarterback in the NFL going into week 11 of the NFL season has been hit more than C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, that's a deeply impossible place to be.
That's mind-blowing. I mean, he was sacked 4 times, pressured 9 times, as we've talked about.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, right? Like, yeah. Sacked 4 times, and we were like, oh, look at the play.
Hey, we're better.
Good job, guys. Way to come out and show some pride.
Are we? Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, I don't know if we can all agree on this, but I think more and more people will agree on this. You're not getting what you paid for. You're not.
Are we just talking about Laremy or the rest of this?
Laremy and Howard is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's abundantly clear.
Right.
I mean, with those guys that are, what are they, top 12 paid tackles, both of them?
Yeah.
Your pass protection composite ranking, this is done by Ben Baldwin, who does some really good analytics stuff. So just composite all the way around, getting a general idea of all the different sites and places that do some level of grading and ranking on pass protection. 18th in the
18th.
League. Sandwiched between the New York Jets and the Las Vegas Raiders. I almost called them the Los Angeles Raiders.
Yeah.
I went back into, I don't even remember. Was you even born?
Yes,
how was I when they were actually the Los Angeles Raiders? Honestly, though.
91?
Still amazing.
Yeah.
Still amazing that they did not let that team go to L.A.
Yeah.
Because, you know what? They probably couldn't allow that to happen. That has just been too much power.
Not back then. All right, so okay, another case that it's the line, guys. It's personnel. These guys aren't it. We can talk about Shaq Mason. Step back. I mean, I think that's obvious, right?
Yes, and at this point, you wonder if that's like not a step back, but a backside of the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you're seeing a decrease at a sports advanced age, because I don't want to call nobody old that is listening. I appreciate y'all doing that. you start wondering, like, is this the, we are straying further and further from the prime of this person's career? And that feels like that's probably an answer here.
Yeah, that's probably it. All right, one more. The case for the offensive line, that's the problem. The run game was completely absent when you made these changes. Maybe in the first half, the passing game was marginally better or a lot better, to be honest. And then it faded. But the run game was never there. And you had Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
You had healthy Joe Mixon.
It felt like one of the things that the Detroit Lions bring to this, shout out to Aaron Glenn, was a level of discipline stopping the run. Mm-hmm. And it was not just a level of discipline, but it was also a level of focus on stopping the run, where it felt like the run blocking was similar.
Yeah.
If not a little bit better to kind of what we had seen of recently. But there was just always that extra defender there when Joe Mixon was going to bounce, as he typically does, to then create the generate the yards that he'll get. Felt like there was always that extra defender there ready to just cut that out, and that limited some of the instances where Joe Mixon took a decently blocked play and made it better earlier on in the season, or, I mean, when he was playing in all of these games that he put up 100 and a touchdown. But, like, that was not available to him, and so it was really a lot more of just what was blocked up.
Yeah. All right, games. So you might be thinking, yeah, it's definitely the line. These guys got to go. Well, let's turn to Bobby Slowick. Is it really the offensive line?
All right, so now the case for Bobby Slowick as the issue. The floor is yours, counselor.
Zero quarterbacks in the NFL have faced more third and 10 or longer than C.J. Stroud.
Oh, yeah.
Zero.
Is this where we indict run C.J. Stroud?
Did you know that, Figgy?
Nah. I would have thought Deshaun was on that list.
Deshaun is second. Stroud, get this. You want to feel even better? Stroud has had plays of third and 10 or longer 50 times this season.
Is that good?
That is not good.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson are tied for second with 37.
Goodness.
Think about that.
Yeah, I saw Ben Solak, ESPN, tweet during the game. In fact, I believe I took my phone and shoved it in Seth Payne's face about, hey, look at this tweet. Because, you know, Ben Solak, young guy, covers NFL, you know, really good about this. He's like, yo, getting tired of seeing this run C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
Right? And that is something that has become a pattern that around the league is known, whether it's around the people, the media that covers the NFL, or just, I imagine, around the teams as well, understanding that, hey, man, run, pass is coming, run, pass. And in a lot of situations, especially if the run is not working well, there were some, you know, some sets of downs where you saw second and five, third and one, first down. But that's by far the anomaly.
Times? 50 times.
More often than not, it's like second and eight.
Yeah.
Or and then like third and nine or like whatever. Like that is more often what you're seeing. And then you're putting C.J. Stroud in situations where defense are pinning their ears back, coming after him and making it tough on him to feel comfortable letting that ball fly. Or even when he does get a first down, you have to do a lot. There's a deep drop. He has to move around, find time, and then get the ball to the receiver.
First half, he converted a lot of crucial third and long.
They sure did. And that was in part because he was given time by that offensive line in the first half.
Yeah, but you're still third and long. It took crucial conversions to do it. Here's another one. Is it Bobby Slowick? That whole tight end as a fullback thing, which I'm being completely honest, I was kind of signing up for during training camp because I thought, okay, Andrew Beck, you can steal another roster spot. You
drank got the Kool-Aid.
Some tight ends. I drank the Kool-Aid. It ain't work.
No.
It ain't work.
Yeah. No, and that's another reason why you start wondering about schematically what's happening here and if it fits, because this is the Shanahan offense is one that requires, but it's predicated on running the football, and then also running the football with a fullback is kind of intrinsic in here. Now, I don't know how much that is absolutely necessary for it, but that's one of those things that absolutely comes up. On both of those fronts, right, your run blocking has been woeful, and I didn't give you the composite grades on that, but just trust me when I say, not good.
Yeah.
Right? I think literally the Raiders and Patriots are the only team that have worse run block composites as of right now with the Texas team. You don't have the personnel to do it, and yet you're doing that. And then in the same way, fullback-wise, you don't have the personnel to do that, as evidenced by gestures, hands widely. And yet this is where
it also comes down to protection, because we are at the point, and this happened, in the second half the other night. Like, you see Dari Agunbowale on the field, you're like, all right, pass. I mean, pass. Like, there's no real threat. because they're giving it away because they don't have the protection from their running backs or a tight end in that role. One more here for you. We keep talking about his play calling and you know, run pass, etc. Let's talk about some of these screens and reverses and dump offs. I know you can probably find the data behind this, but I don't think we need any
you
data.
You don't know what data I can find.
we don't need data to tell us that is not his feel for the game and feel for getting those plays set up to be successful. I thought the compare and contrast of Sunday was incredibly evident. Ben Johnson knows what he's doing on those types of plays, and Bobby Slowick does not.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I will just use as example the end-around reverse, right? Mm-hmm. You got John Metchie in the end-around. He tosses it to who was a tank,
mm-hmm.
and there is a white jersey in the backfield waiting for him that pushes him further back, and he just has no opportunity to get around.
Yeah.
You know who messed up on that play in my estimation? Joe Mixon is supposed to get that block on the backside that mm-hmm. ultimately then allows the reverse to come back around and have some space to get
yeah.
going. Joe Mixon misses his block. And this is not me trying to come for Joe Mixon, but I think that is indicative of one of the things that has really torpedoed Bobby Slowick in a lot of these instances is that there's been so many instances of just one guy missing a block and blowing up the whole damn play.
Mm-hmm.
Where sometimes I think, and yes, this is me taking up for Bobby Slowick, I think sometimes the play call is not bad, but the execution, even if it's mostly good, if it's not all the way good, it falls apart. And I thought that was one of those instances where I think we got on here yesterday talking about how, you know, sometimes it gets too cute. Sometimes your guys aren't handling up with what they're supposed to do to make the play right.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things going back to the players only meeting. I think mm-hmm. that's one of those things that these players are trying to hold accountable as well. It's like, hey, man, your coordinator's getting a lot of hell. And sometimes y'all are just messing up plays.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, and I mentioned this with Brandon Scott when he was in here, you know. We're telling them, guys. You know, D'Amico has said it. Bobby said it. We work on this every week. We're going to focus on it more this week. We're telling them it's just not resonating. Well, you keep saying that enough times, and people are going to realize, well, maybe it's you. You know, maybe you're not delivering the message. All right, so where do we fall on this? Is it the offensive line, or is it Bobby Slowick?
The unfun answer is yes. I think the offensive line makes it a lot more difficult on Bobby Slowick, but I also don't think that Bobby Slowick has had some portion, like the run-run-pass portion of this, I think that goes over well if you can block better. Mm-hmm. When you can't block better, I think that you need to change the way that you go about some of these things. There's clearly some things that I think you need to implement that you can help negate some of the pressure that is on the offensive line or some of the things.
Yeah.
That, and of course, I'm not trying to give the offensive line a pass because we all know, like, mm-hmm. it's been a lot of conversation about how it's not good enough. But I think that then, once that has become abundantly clear, there's some things that maybe you need to shift up in the way that you go about things from Bobby Slowick, and it does not feel like those have happened.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think it's an offensive line issue, but with it being Bobby Slowick and him being the offensive coordinator, I think he's going to get the blame and probably, I don't know if he's going to get fired or anything, mm-hmm. but usually I feel like people look at coaching and be like, hey, if you can't coach these guys up, we'll find somebody else that will. That can do it. So I think it's the offensive line, to be honest. I talked about it before. I think it's an attitude. I think you got to get a real dog in there, man, somebody that's going to fight for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see anybody, for matter of fact, on this offense that will fight for you like the defense will. Defense got some dogs. I just don't see any dogs on the offensive
side. Outside of Joe Mixon.
Yeah, and he was just made a captain.
Yeah,
he wasn't a captain going into training camp.
This might be a surprise,
but he's been a vocal leader, supposedly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, for sure. But I mean, this might be a surprise. I don't. Maybe not. I think it is the line. As much as like that third and 10 stat blew me away. That's play calling, but it got also a little bit of offensive line. You're not blocking up those run plays. You're not converting some early pass plays or whatever. I'm looking at this line and I don't see it in Titus Howard. I don't see it in Laramie Tunsil. Just, you know, he does just enough, you know.
It seemed like a good offensive line. You usually get some really good highlights of somebody like, wow, look at that guy running that dude down or pancaking that guy right there. Like, what are some good moments from this offensive line like that.
And that word that Figgy used, I think, is very, very important in this case and trying to determine, you know, what you really think the problem is. Dogs. Like, Laremy Tunsil uses that word a lot. Oh, so-and-so's a dog, so-and-so's a dog. Laremy Tunsil's a dog in pass blocking, but is he? You know,
which like, is funny because, it's funny because typically it feels like when you're talking about offensive linemen and we start talking about dogs, run blocking is where it starts showing up. And offensive linemen, the typical offensive lineman will usually tell you that they like run blocking more. They can go and they're on the offensive. Mm-hmm. They can go and affect their will. They can go and move some people. And it feels like that is rarely what you're getting. And some of that I understand is, you know, you get the zone blocking scheme. Sometimes that makes it a little tough to get out and really go hit somebody because you're moving laterally. Mm-hmm. But even then, right, there feels like, to your point, Fig, there's not enough of those plays where it feels like, oh, somebody got him out the paint.
It feels
like you don't necessarily see them throwing dudes out the club, which is absolutely something you would love to see.
It seemed like it's more moments of them watching them saying, dang, they ain't picked CJ up. Dang, why he just standing there?
Or he stopped.
Yeah. You know, he just rolled right past him. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it's more moments like that than them actually being dogs and taking up.
Hey, man. Unscientific survey here, but fans are blaming Bobby.
And
that's probably
fair. Understandable.
That's probably fair because, like, let's be real, like, that's probably the cheaper option. I don't think they could just get rid of this whole offensive line like that. Mm-hmm. The easier solution is to find somebody else that could get mm-hmm. to these guys.
And Bobby ends up being the lightning rod. And then Bobby is also the place where, as an authority figure, he exists there, right? It is mm-hmm. his offense.
It's easy out.
As the coordinator.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the frustrating thing about it. I think that there's a level of culpability for both of these, but I think where the problem generates, mm-hmm. the genesis, it does feel like that is offensive line.
Yeah.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on a Tuesday. It's about that time where we do our lunchtime confessions brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey, and we'll do those next. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reggie and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey.
These are my confessions.
Hey, did you guys know there was a Super Bowl last night? I watched it.
What are you talking about?
The Super Bowl last night. Did y'all didn't see it?
No.
I don't know what you mean.
You didn't see it?
What are you talking about? What happened?
I was plugged in. YouTube Live.
What?
Almost 100,000 people watching.
Wow, on a Monday?
On a Monday night. You didn't watch the Super Bowl?
What are you talking about?
It's a screw your Saturday.
I feel like I'm going crazy. What does he mean
that's
right now?
The Monday.
The Super Bowl of food, of restaurants. First time ever, and this has been going on forever, that the Michelin Guide came to Texas for some unknown reason.
Yes.
Now, some of our listeners may know the reason. I didn't really look for the reason why. That's on me. Michelin has never rated Texas restaurants.
Haters. That's what it is.
Last night, they rated Texas restaurants. And
who had the best?
Oh, dude. I think
we got some stars, man.
Top five. Who's top five?
The Houston got several stars. And I can tell you, you know, the Michelin stars, but I was all plugged in on the barbecue. Let me start right there.
Yeah, they actually awarded some Michelin stars, but then they also like kind of had
the Bib Gourmand.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Okay.
I know exactly about that. Bib Gourmand, that's my aunt's cousin. Yeah.
The Bib Gourmand means Michelin highly recommends these restaurants. They didn't get a star, but they got,
honorable mention.
Well, no, they got recommendations. It's really a high honor.
Okay.
And basically,
But not no star, though.
Truth Barbecue, Pinkerton's.
Okay.
The Pit Room, okay. Blood Brothers.
Okay.
Killens. And those were all highly recommended by Michelin. Which
all those places be having lines too.
They all have lines.
Lines out the door.
Now, when you got Michelin,
all but one have been on the Bite Meat podcast. How about that?
Which one?
Michelin star restaurants. You ready? BCN Taste and Tradition in Houston. Le Jardiniere of Houston.
Bad and Bougie.
March. Never heard of March. These are one. These got stars.
Okay.
Musafir from Houston. Indian food. Tatemo, which is Tatemo, which is in Houston. Who? Which is Mexican food or Spanish. And Corkscrew got a star.
Okay.
Corkscrew barbecue restaurant in Spring got a Michelin
pretty good too, man.
Star.
That's tough.
That is hard to do, man.
I've always said, man, Houston is a great food city that probably could rival some of the best in the country. Mm. Like the one that I always point to is Chicago. Chicago's always held up as like a great food city. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Houston got Chicago.
Big time.
And so it was cool to see like these Michelin stars kind of dropped on Houston as like a confirmation of that take that I've had, is that Houston's a great city, but I always wonder like if they would get like the Michelin stars, like that high, mm-hmm. the high honors, because it always feels like Houston's a great blue collar food city though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just
like that. By the way, the barbecue, that's a big honor, man, for Houston to get the Bib Gourmand
you just wanted to say it, man, didn't you? Hey, you can just say it. You didn't have to do the whole thing.
Hey, man. How about this? You want a little rivalry win?
Yeah.
Six restaurants in Houston got a Michelin star. One in Dallas.
Oh.
Ooh.
One in Dallas.
I have said Houston is a far better food city than Dallas.
Some place called Tatsu, Japanese restaurant.
Why are you looking at me like I was supposed to be there?
Like, hey,
you like Japanese food, don't you?
Yeah, I ain't got money for all that. What you mean? Come on, man.
So yeah, I was plugged in, man.
That's cool, man. No wonder everybody be late to NRG, man. That's
the purpose. You know, there's just CJ Stroud. There's just so much to eat.
There's so much to do. Eat, you know, man. So much food. We full. So it takes us a little slower to get to the
everybody got yeah. everybody got the itis. Got to catch a nap before the game.
Yeah.
I gotta confess, my brain is poisoned by what I'm calling the conformist style of NBA play. Like, I'm very used, like
the conformist.
Yeah, style. Like just Ooh. you understand how in the NBA, like, people complain about the analytics because like there's a style of basketball that's like designed to be the best.
Oh,
at this
point, I know where you're going.
Where everybody's shooting threes and everybody's like getting to the bucket. Nobody's taking mid range shots, and you know it's especially weird because like I would watch old like all-star games, whatever, on NBA TV, and I'd see like a fast break and I'm like, oh, he's gonna kick it out to the corner. No, he's just gonna dunk it. That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's like, and I feel bad because I'm like, man, my brain is in that place, and I'm feeling that feeling again watching these Rockets because I have to shift my mentality. And the reason why I feel most bad is like, this is some of the reason why people don't like the NBA, is because it feels everybody plays the same, because there is a style of play that seemingly is mathematically the best way to go, but there's not a diversity of styles. And that's one of the kind of nice thing about the Rockets, is they have a diverse style, and I have to shake away what I've like kind of beaten into myself, which is, oh man, with an NBA team, oh, look for that corner three. Yeah. Look for this.
And I'm with you.
The Rockets play differently, and I really do appreciate it about that.
I'm with you.
But it made me realize, oh yeah, I've just been an NBA pilled at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I was cutting it close today, man. So I'm still trying to figure out the right time to leave the crib to avoid like the most, I guess, painful traffic.
Yeah,
because sometimes it depends what time you leave.
There's like a sweet spot with some places.
I've been trying to find that sweet spot, and yesterday threw me off because yesterday was Veterans Day. And I forgot a lot of people were probably off.
Oh, you thought you had hit the note. Yeah, you were like, oh, we found it.
Got the route.
I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I can leave around 8:15, 8:30. And it's only about a 22-minute ride. So I tried to do that today. And today it was stuck at like 40 minutes.
Oof.
And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe let it die down a little bit. I'm like, if it gets about 35, 34, then I dip out. Waited around. It was still at like 39, 38. I was just like, oh, man. So I was cutting it close. I'm like, man, I just got to get out of here, man. So I end up dipping out. It took me a whole different way this time. I ain't know where the hell I was at. But I end up getting here. I got here around 9:15, about 9:20.
You bought some cologne.
Yeah, I was about to get on the elevator. I looked over there in the little area on the lobby. I'm like, ooh, is that some cologne? And the elevator door opened, and I did one of these.
Yeah, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
I'm like, let me go over here real quick.
Yeah.
Spent about another 20 minutes over there just picking out different colognes, man.
But you know what you realize? You can do that because the show going fine, man.
Yeah. Fine. So I'm like,
who needs to be to work early?
I got up here about 9:45, and I'm like, all right, let me get to work. Let's get together.
I got to tell you though, Figgy, as a former longtime commuter, as you well know, that search for the right route that's just a little faster is never going to end.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing it for as long as you live in that house.
Man. Like,
maybe I can steal 5 minutes if I go this way.
Yeah. I thought I found the sweet spot because, you know, it might be heavy traffic around 8 o'clock or something like that. So I'm like, if I wait till like 8:30, maybe it'd be about a 20-minute ride or something. Like, nah.
Nope.
It didn't work, man.
Nope.
Veterans Day fooled me yesterday. Watch this.
I'm sure it's a psychological thing, but for the life of me, it's so weird when someone else makes your lunch instead of yourself making your lunch.
Uh-huh.
It just tastes better. I don't understand
when somebody else does it.
Someone like, so I had the game, you know, obviously I was there late Sunday, so, and I always make my own lunches, as you know, usually just a sandwich, whatever, carry me through the day. But my wife made two lunches since I was, you know, I was nice of her, you know, since I was going to be late. They just, why is it that a meal, whether it's breakfast or lunch, it just tastes better? You could make the exact same thing. It's just a sandwich. It just tastes better when someone else makes it.
It's kind of like if you order the same thing and other people's food tastes better than yours.
Why is that?
It's like it's
gotta be a psychological thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's a psychological thing. I wonder if it's like the same, something similar as to like when you actually cook and then you're done cooking and you're not hungry no more.
Maybe.
Like because I know that's a part of our sense of taste is smell. And is it just like maybe in putting it together, you got the smell already. So you did part of it. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff at the wall.
It's just a sandwich. But I'm like, man, what a good sandwich.
She probably used a little more love to it, man. She probably.
The secret ingredient.
Love.
She probably did a little kiss on the side of the sandwich. Just
man,
a little.
I'm telling you. Watch this.
If you've listened since I've been here, you might know that I have 3 televisions in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say that as the flex. I say that for context.
A little bit of flex.
I mean, there is, but I'm not. I don't say that to do that. What I say is to give context, because what I've tried to do is that thing where you go, hey, TV's over here, but not TV's in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Like, this has always been like a big debate. Do you have a TV in the bedroom?
Yeah.
And I've never been on that side where it's like, oh, it can't have a TV in the bedroom. But I just didn't put one in since I moved in. And I realized that I have a problem because I'm like, I need to put a TV in the bedroom.
No, don't do it.
Don't do it.
I don't have a TV in my bed. I haven't had one since I moved down.
There's got to be one place where you can just whatever, you know, just chill, peace, go to bed, and quiet.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you can turn the TV off. You know, it doesn't have to stay on.
Don't do it because you won't.
You don't want to be.
Because you won't.
Yeah. It's like the only time I want to be in the bed watching TV is if I'm sick. If I'm sick and I got to be in the bed and I want to watch a
little. And you probably just lay on the couch.
Yeah, exactly.
But don't do it. The bed is a lot more comfortable. Like, there's times where I'm like, I want to watch this thing that I'm watching in the living room, but I would actually like to lay down as well.
There's a TV in your bedroom, you're going to watch.
Yeah, nah.
You're
keep the
gonna
bed,
watch it.
Keep the bedroom nice and peaceful, man.
Yeah.
You don't need those spirits.
He's
from
still
going to
do it. I can tell by the look on his face. Yeah, I'm still getting a TV in the bedroom.
I will say this, since I got the house, it do look cool to put a flat screen on the wall and all that stuff. But my wife was like, nah, let's keep it how it is.
So I'm with
832, man, what TV in the bedroom is a must? See, the people, y'all lying. The people say the TV in the bedroom is a must.
See, the thing is, when I go to the bedroom, I'm going for one thing, the sleep, the rest.
Oh, I thought, okay.
And that thing.
Don't forget, that one happens too.
I'm not going to the bedroom to watch TV.
Yeah, exactly.
I watch TV downstairs sitting there.
I watch a lot of TV, man, as do you. I don't need to be watching it as I'm going to bed.
Yeah, everybody. I don't know. Look, y'all. I get it.
Do it, Reggie.
I work with y'all. Y'all ostensibly have my best interest at heart, but the people.
Yeah.
The people on the 5-hour energy fan line.
Not all of them.
Tell me, I need to mount a TV in the bedroom, man. All right. Now those are our lunchtime confessions right here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it's time for CF Boat.
CF Boat.
College football on a Tuesday. Let's talk about the happenings in college football. We'll talk about it next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
In the Loop, Sports Radio 610 on a Tuesday. Let's do a little college football on a Tuesday, otherwise known as
CF boat.
There you
baby.
Go. Do it until it turns on.
I thought you were
right.
going to say it. I thought you were.
Well, I was trying to tee you up. I probably could have let you know that I was going to tee you up, but I wanted to see if we could make it organic.
No, we couldn't.
I'll avoid doing that next time. All right, let's revisit the week that was. Now, I believe later today we're going to get the second iteration of the college football playoff rankings to see what's happening there. But as you know, the official position of I shouldn't say the show. I can't speak for both of y'all, but of me personally. Is that stuff don't actually matter until we get to the
No, it doesn't. I think most of us agree on that. But I'm glad you brought up the college football playoff bracket, because the ACC and SEC is getting real interesting all of a sudden after
the
week.
It is. And honestly, maybe more importantly, the Big 12 is.
Big 12.
Because the Big 12, there is a circumstance that if they're not careful, because remember, in order to get those kind of those high rankings or the bias, I think is the people who are automatically get their bids into the college football playoff is the top five ranked conference champions.
Yes.
If they're not careful, Iowa State, got another loss this weekend thanks to University of Kansas. If they're not careful, there's not going to be a very great team, even if whoever wins it, right, Colorado or what have you, wins it. They might still be ranked behind someone like a Boise State.
Yeah.
Maybe an Army. And one of those teams could get the automatic bids, and then you would have to be vying for an at-large at that point.
Yeah, yeah, you would. So that's part of it. ACC, how about SMU, man? I mean, SMU is in a place where that could happen, and they got games against Boston College, Virginia, and Cal left. So that could happen. And then in the SEC, obviously Alabama and Ole Miss with enormous wins, either A&M or Texas. Could have two losses. Tennessee could have two losses. They face Georgia this week. SEC champion will have two losses. SEC is getting real interesting in terms of rankings as well, kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. So it's going to be a fun thing to watch if you care very much about the actual and the rankings of it all. How do you feel about just like college football in general, considering that we have so many of these teams at the top that are losing to each other, and it does not feel like you have many elite teams outside of like Indiana?
I think the playoff came at the perfect time.
The 12 team?
I've always liked the idea of a 12-team playoff. If not more, but let's say 12 teams, I think it came at a perfect time. This is going to be extremely entertaining. It's going to be kind of like ultimately it'll be bigger than March Madness, but it's going to be kind of like a March Madness with upsets on the road early and stuff like that, because you're going to have teams like true sort of Cinderella, you know, whether it's an SMU or an Indiana, you know, or something like that. Oh man, Indiana, you know, and it could not have come at a better time. I think it's going to be extremely entertaining.
I'll wait to see. I've been a little bit of a hater of the expanded playoff because I don't think that it actually gives what we really say that we want. Mm-hmm. Especially like the idea of like a true champion. I don't think that really is going to exist when you're doing 340 teams or what have you. But regardless, I'm not here I'm not here to be your curmudgeon, right? Yeah. So, hey man, we'll see how it ultimately goes. But what we can say for certain is that 10 Windiana has come upon us, ladies and gentlemen. Kurt Cignetti has popped into this program and done the unthinkable for the first time in 136 years.
Say that again.
First time in 136 years.
That they're 10-0.
Indiana is 10-0.
136 years.
And he called his shot, too.
Yeah, he did.
He said, Google me, I win. And what has he done? Nothing but win at Indiana. Like, this is the thing that makes this incredible, right? Is college football is not a sport that's built to have, really success out of places that are not expected and really sustained success. So, of course, Cignetti thing, like, we haven't seen the sustained nature of it yet, which that'll come with time. But, like, and I understand that things shift a little bit in the NIL sphere, but you have to have people putting in money, right? It's just there are the teams that do well have built-in advantages, whether it's geography, whether it's institutional investment,
history
in sports, history, prestige, and even prestige is tough because you look at Penn State and that's all they're eating off of, right? But there you have to have these institutional advantages to be a good team, and usually the teams that have found a way to win without that, you come back around in a couple years, you find out it was cheating, right? Like, those are the situations that happen oftentimes.
Or it wasn't sustainable.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they was cheating. and Indiana comes out of nowhere to do this in a crazy, unlikely turnaround that you've compared to Kansas State.
Yeah, look, I obviously I used to cover college football on a daily basis for about 10, 12 years, and I never, ever thought I would see a program that was, to your point, it was dead. Like, dead, dead, dead.
And it's a basketball school.
As Kansas State, what Bill Snyder did to Kansas State.
Oh, Kansas State. No, Kansas State was wildly or frequently referred to as the worst program in college football.
I think they went about a 15-year stretch where they were averaging about 2 wins a year.
And that's in large part because they don't have any institutional advantages. It's not like a super well-funded program, per se. The geography is really terrible. Middle of Kansas, like what you're doing there.
Yeah.
There's not, you know, it's not a huge population center, all those types of things, right? Like, it's just not, it's not really built
and then this
to
happened.
Be successful.
I think Indiana's right up there with it. No, he has to be a little, sustain it a little more. But what Indiana has done, what Kurt Cignetti has done at Indiana is every bit as impressive, because I never, ever, ever would have guessed that they could do this. Figgy, a little nervous? They got a bye week.
Yeah.
No, they have a bye week.
Bye week before they face off against the Ohio State University.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous, man. I can't even lie to you, man. Yeah. I ain't looking at this like, oh, this is just Indiana. Oh, this is Indiana.
This is Indiana.
No, this is 10 Windiana is what you want to call it.
And Ohio State ain't been looking like Ohio State.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they got.
Yeah. See the Utah AD after the game Saturday night, the late game Saturday night, the sipping game, as I like to call it, BYU and Utah.
Yeah, this was real nasty.
This, at first, you know, I was like, yeah. Well, listen to the AD, first of all.
I've been an athletic director for 12 years. This game was absolutely stolen from us. We were excited about being in the Big 12, but tonight I am not. We won this game. Someone else stole it from us. Very disappointed. I will talk to the commissioner. This was not fair to our team. I'm disgusted by the professionalism of the officiating crew tonight. Thank you.
Clutching his pearls. Oh, look, think of the children.
That's the AD. It was stolen from us.
It was stolen from us.
And if you watch the play, it might have gone either way, but I think most people would say, yeah, you kind of held him. It was a defensive holding, basically.
Mm-hmm. And look, this is a petulant place to be in a new league.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen really what the Big 12 is doing.
They reprimanded him and are going to fine him. That came down this morning.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. I missed that this morning. But, I mean, that has to be it. Come on, man. Like, also, where are you going? Right? Like, where are you going at this point? Because if you feel so poorly, and look, I don't think there's anybody with any of these conferences that feels so great about the conference that they're in and the officiating that they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, man, where are you? Are you going to bounce from the Big 12 because of this?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Right? Like, I don't see the benefit of doing that, and you really did show your keister on
Yes, he did. He absolutely did. Just embarrassing it. No, if it was just an absolute, and this is a big rivalry game, so he does have a lot on the line there, of course, Utah-BYU. But if it was just like an egregious, made-up, you know, flag that was dropped for no reason, that was defensive holding.
Welcome to college football,
exactly.
Man. Like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I wanted to bring to the fore here, I kind of slowed down on the Ashton Gentry watch. Who is the running back? Who it feels like he is at the head of Heisman watch here.
Travis Hunter too.
Travis Hunter still there with a fun Colorado team that, mind you, bowl eligible and all.
Mm-hmm.
But Cam Ward having a tough go of it against Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech gets a victory over Miami because Cam Ward just could not carry the entirety of that Miami team. Which Mario Cristobal maybe has to answer for that. Ashton Gentry and Boise State get yet another win. And Ashton Gentry, he is now on pace for just over 2,200 rush yards, which slowed a good amount. And there was a point where he was on a good pace to possibly get close to Barry Sanders' record, but it's a good 400 yards short of his pace now, short of Barry Sanders' record, which congratulations to Ashton Gentry for being so good, but that speaks to just how much of an absolute monster Barry Sanders was at Oklahoma State.
It was stupid. I think I mentioned it to you before. You remember that very well, watching. It's just stupid what he did. But what Gentry's doing is right up there with him. And by the way, he might He might pop off another 300-yard rushing game and get back on track.
I don't know if that'll happen, though. Like, teams gear in on him. Yeah. Boise State, mind you, got a 28-21 victory over Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
But 209 yards. But he's had a couple of, 100-plus yard gains, mm-hmm. which clearly won't keep you on pace. Teams are geared towards stopping him. And then they've done a good amount of, sitting him in the second half of games once the game is out of play, just because of how outsized his role is.
A couple of funny things that I wanted to get to. Did y'all see the video of the Georgia player Ole Miss upsets Georgia? Fans storm the field, music's playing, everybody's jumping up and down, and the camera pans, and there's a Georgia safety jumping up and down with the Ole Miss people.
And Kirby Smart chewed his
him up. So the kid said that there was some family members on the field that he hadn't seen in a long time, and he was just celebrating that. We might get your final answer on that on Thursday, by the way. But he called Kirby Smart, literally called him an idiot. He said he's an idiot. It's like, okay, coach.
Tell me how you really feel, coach. Also, okay, coach, do you have any time to answer about how you've taken what is supposed to be the program that absolutely tears teams mm-hmm. down and lost to Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Didn't want to talk about that.
I imagine he didn't. And then real quick, so LSU is just going to have all the problems with all running quarterbacks then? Because Jalen Milroe towed him up.
Destroyed him. Right after Marcel Reed did it for a half, Jalen Milroe did it for a game. And LSU, they don't like losing in LSU, as we all know.
And what is it, four losses thus far season?
4-8 against ranked opponents in Brian Kelly's career, that ain't going to fly.
Yeah, it feels like he gets fired, and it's not just because of the standard. It's because people don't like him.
Yeah, they don't like him.
Right? You can't be not liked and then also not get the job done.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Because also, at that place, people can go, Ed Orgeron, I don't know if he knew English.
They like Ed Orgeron. They'll take him back in a second.
They were like, I don't know if he knew English, and he won a national title.
They'll
right?
take
like,
him
that's
back
the
in
standard
a
here, and they don't like you, and you're not winning.
How about Dana Holgorsen real quick?
That's true.
Dana Holgorsen got hired 6 days ago.
As an offensive coordinator, or offensive analyst.
Just got promoted to offensive coordinator. They demoted the coordinator.
He is their problem.
Dude.
Shout out to Nebraska.
He came in and said, yeah, I'll be an analyst. No, I'm not. I'm going to be the coordinator. How'd you like to be that coordinator that said, oh, God, here comes Dana Holgorsen?
Shout out to Nebraska. I hope they have plenty of Red Bull stock. Yeah. All right. That's the college football on a Tuesday. A quick prance through the weekend that was in college football. We'll see what happens with the college football rankings tonight. I imagine Oregon still stays the top of that. All right. Coming up next. C.J. Stroud's clearly had a little bit of a step back in somehow. It might be confidence, whatever you want to deem it. But how do you go about rebuilding whatever has been seemingly missing from C.J. of late? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about that next.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.